Hey, good morning. Welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Good to have you at the other end of the radio waves and the telephone line and the email address and the Twitter machine and all of those multitudinous ways we have of communicating nowadays. It's incredible. We can remain plugged in around the clock, year long. There's just unrelenting communication that we are now capable of. No rest for the weary or the wicked. Hey, before we begin, a reminder, you're always invited, though, to be part of Perspectives via any of those aforementioned devices. Phone and email works, 414-1234 local. It's 800-926-8809 long distance. We also have a Twitter handle, which is at WFSU Perspective. That is a singular perspective because it is a singular program. Hey, remember those wild and crazy days of the late 1980s? You'd turn on the radio, the commercial radio, and the Bangles, Walk Like an Egyptian, would be playing, or maybe Whitney Houston's first big hit, I Want to Dance with Somebody. Remember that? Well, nationally, the average salary back then, we're talking about 86, 87, was $24,000 a year. Some things don't change, do they? Especially in Tallahassee. A new Honda Civic was going for $6,200. The cartoon series The Simpsons made its debut on TV for the first time. And an enthusiastic, fresh-faced young lady of 21 joined the Tallahassee Fire Department. And that fresh-faced young lady is still with us here today, and her name is Cindy Dick. Chief Dick, good to have you on.
Good morning, Tom. Good to be here.
Boy, this has been a busy week for you, hasn't it?
It has been a busy week.
Okay, well, let's see. Last week, the announcement came out that you were going to be stepping down from the position. And suddenly, this week then, on top of all the accolades, all the media coverage that you got, you had a little visit to the governor and cabinet the other day. And what happened there?
Well, back in July, every year, the Florida Fire Chiefs Association at different times during the year, different associations. So there's the Firefighters Union, and then there's Florida Fire Chiefs, and there's the Fire Marshals Association. And they give their what we call of the year awards. And the Florida Fire Chiefs Association recognized me last July as the Fire Chief of the Year. Well, in March of every year, the cabinet gets together and brings all of those groups together and recognizes them as a collective group of people. So that happened Monday night and Tuesday morning.
That was really neat. What goes into an award like that? What's the criteria they use to decide who gets it?
Well, for the Florida Fire Chiefs Association Fire Chief of the Year Award, there is a nomination package. My staff actually nominated me, unbeknownst to me. They really got me. They surprised me completely because when I got down there, I didn't even know I had been nominated, and they had snuck my family in, and they had done all kinds of things at the ceremony in July. So I was pretty stoked by that. But the staff put together the nomination, and it's basically a narrative of why they think you ought to be Fire Chief of the Year. It's also got a great deal of support letters from different associations. In my case, there were support letters from senior city management. There were support letters from other associations in the community that I've been a part of. And it's past previous Fire Chiefs of the Year review all the nomination packets and determine who the winner is each year. So I'll be on that group next year, which will be an honor too.
Okay, boy, talk about going out on a high note. Before we get into that, though, whatever possessed you to get into this biz anyway? Back then, again, when you were 21, your whole life ahead of you and so many options, you know, that you could have gone. Was this something you always wanted to do or what?
No, you know, it's funny. I tell this story a lot about how I got into the fire service. And I hear I'm hiring now, okay, people that were born after I was already a lieutenant in the department. But you hear a lot of people back then, a lot of young men say, oh, I've always wanted to be a firefighter. I knew since I was a kid I would watch this, you know, the units go up and down the road. Well, that wasn't the case for me at all because when I was a young girl, that wasn't one of my choices. You know, it wasn't even on my radar. Firefighter was not a box that you could check for a little girl. So it never occurred to me. I'd love to say it was a noble calling, but it wasn't. I stumbled into this thing, and I actually stumbled into you know, my dream job. But what happened was I was, you know, out of high school. I was going to TCC. I didn't want to be in TCC, you know, so I was deciding to drop out of there, figuring out what I was going to do. I was delivering flowers, you know, working an hourly wage job. And I ran into two women. I was playing softball, of course, all the all-American things, right? Went to a local establishment after the softball game for some refreshments and met two women there who had not too long prior to that, been hired as firefighters at the city of Tallahassee. Their names were Deborah Mesqua and Andrea Jones. And they said, did you ever consider being a firefighter? And I said, no. So didn't. They started to tell me a little bit about the job, a little bit about the opportunities. And I said, you know, Lively at that time, Lively Votech, had a fire training school, which was fortunate because, you know, the other option was to go to Ocala at the fire college and actually, you know, go for 2 months, 8 to 5, you know, Monday through Friday, which I couldn't do and many people can't do while they're working and trying to pay the bills. So I went to fire school at Lively. It was nights and weekends, and within 2 weeks knew that I had just absolutely stumbled into my dream job.
So those two gals, were they the first to join the Tallahassee Fire Department, first women?
No, they were not. There were a few before them. They were among the first, but there were actually a group of women that came a few years prior to them. Many of them did not stay till retirement. But Andrea, you know, Andrea and Deborah, I've got to say about them, both very successful in their own right. Deborah went on to become the fire chief in Madison, Wisconsin. She served there for a number of years. I want to say, Deborah, if you're listening, I'm sorry I get this wrong, but over 10, I think, and has recently retired from there and moved back to Tallahassee. Andrea Jones retired from us as our division chief of operations. So both very successful.
Now, at the same time you were joining the Tallahassee Police Department or Fire Department, I was working for what was then called Centel, the local telephone company, which went, you know, went from Southeastern right. to Centel to Sprint to Embark and all that stuff. And there were a couple of very brave women who decided to crack the glass ceiling when it came to the folks who were out there climbing the poles and pulling the cable and, you know, the outside craft people that we talk. That was an exclusive boys' club. And for those women who first broke in, they were, should we say, tolerated, at least for the first couple of years. But there was still this undercurrent of you guys really shouldn't be here. Did you pick up on any of that at TFD?
Oh, of course. Of course. I mean, there's no doubt that the majority of the people that were on the department at that time didn't want us there, you know. But I don't begrudge them that. Change is hard, and that was a huge change for the fire service. It was a huge change. These guys had, you know, the fire service is so steeped in tradition, and these guys had been steeped in that tradition for many, many, many years. And change is scary. So it was a little chilly, you know. It was a little frosty of a reception, but those same people – you know, I learned so much from over the years. And, you know, the way I like to tell the story when I go and speak to groups about what I did, because everybody's tactics are different and everybody has to do what works for them. But for me, firefighters do everything in groups of three. We really don't do anything in isolation because we can't perform our job successfully without a team. You've got to have somebody at the end of the nozzle. You've got to have somebody at the engine with the appropriate pump pressure. You've got to have somebody that's your eyes while you're on the nozzle and that's directing the operation. So we do everything in minimum groups of three. That's why you see us at the grocery store in threes. Sadly, that's why we also die in groups. You'll find, you know, when you hear stories about firefighters that die in the course of firefighting activities, it's typically more than one. But so the way I looked at it was, you know, when you start there, you're on your engine company with your other two guys at that point in time, because they were pretty strategic about making sure no women were in the same place at the same time. And, you know, you just start doing your job to the best of your ability and trying to win those two guys over. And before you know it, you know, your little engine company says, oh, she's all right, you know, and that spreads through the station, which spreads through the shift. And, you know, you just pick them off one at a time, basically.
What was the timeline of your kind of moving up through the ranks at the department?
I started in the fire department in 1987, May of 87. So I'll have my 26 years in just a couple of months, and was promoted to lieutenant in July of 92. So that's about 5 years.
5 years. Uh-huh.
I was promoted to captain in 97, January of 97. And then we went through a long period of time where we didn't have a whole lot of promotions. There were a lot of people in acting capacities, and that was we were in a transition phase at that point in time. And I served as a acting training chief for a while, and then when Chief Steve Anderson was an interim chief, I served as a acting chief of special services kind of thing. But then I was promoted to fire chief in October of 2005.
Now, that also was like another break point, at least within some organizations it is, because even guys who now, you know, hey, I'll work with her, but I ain't working for her. Did you have any of that?
You know what? Listen, I'm sure there's some of that out there everywhere for everybody, right? Whatever you bring to the table, be it your gender, your race, your personality, your religion, whatever it is you bring to the table, somebody's going to find reason to, you know, begrudge you for that. But somebody else is going to provide you an opportunity for that very same reason. So are those people out there? Sure, they're out there. But you can't I couldn't focus on that. I had to focus on doing my job. For me, by 2005, I was well established in the department, and you know, many people knew me, and I was really greeted with a pretty big welcome.
Yeah, and I noticed when the word came that it was like, yay. You know, it was there were some write-ups that, you know, the Tallahassee Fire Department's first woman chief, et cetera, et cetera. But it was almost like, well, you know, we have a new chief, and she happens to be a woman.
Right. You well, know? You know, right. I'd been in the department for 18 years at that point in time. So I think I had an easier go of it than had I been a woman and coming from the outside, you know, because the majority, you know, they knew me. They knew me. Those that liked me, those that didn't. I mean, I was established and they knew that they were getting. So that takes some of the edge off, you know, when you're afraid of change. So familiarity breeds a comfort level. And I think that was what happened in my case.
Yeah. We are talking to outgoing. Well, you've always been an outgoing kind of person. But outgoing Tallahassee Fire Chief Cindy Dick here on Perspectives this morning. 414-1234 is the number to call if you would like to talk to the chief and ask her about some of the terrific stories that she has for the nearly 26 years of service that she's been providing to the city of Tallahassee at the fire department. A fire department which, by the way, celebrated its 100th anniversary under her tenure, too. And there aren't too many fire departments that can say that right now. You can also join us on Twitter. That is at WFSU Perspective, and we'll be right back. Hey, back on Perspectives with Tallahassee Fire Chief Cindy Dick, retiring after 26 years on the force. And you were invited to join us by phone, of course, 414-1234, the very number I think that Mike dialed. And we'll go to his call now. Hey, Mike.
Good morning.
Hey, how are you, sir?
I'm fine. Yourself?
We could not complain.
Neither can I. I'm retired.
Hey, that's Mikey Rogop.
Yeah, very good.
Hey, buddy.
How are you?
I'm good.
Hey. I just wanted to say that it has been a pleasure over the years working with and for you, Chief. And we're all proud of you.
Thank you, Mike, very much. Mike retired last year.
So how's retirement treating you, Mike?
It couldn't be better. 28 and a half years, it was an adjustment, but nothing short of great.
Well, do you have any retirement advice for Chief Dick?
Do what you want.
Thanks, bud.
That's best of all possible things. I believe Chief Dick, the fire department lost a great grand old man here, the historian of the department, Ridgeway Coe, who died last week, I believe, at the age of 91, I think.
Yes.
Ridgeway was.
Yeah, that's true.
I remember a couple of things that right around the 100th anniversary run-up and the unleashing of the display of fire plugs down at Fire Station 1 downtown, which I think is really, really cool. He was on deck for that, and he was sharing some old stories of the department. But what happened to his archive then?
Well, let me just tell you just really briefly about Chief Ridgway and the Coe family in terms of the fire service here in Tallahassee. His father, Chief Ridgway's father, was T.P. Coe, and he was a fire chief when it was the Tallahassee Volunteer Fire Company, 1906.
Oh, God.
And he became the first fire chief when it became the Tallahassee Fire Department. He was the first fire chief then, the actual chief of the department. Well, we've got a picture of, in the 1920s, of this man who just died, Ridgway, at about 2 years old, sitting on a fire engine. So he grew up in the fire service, became a member of the Tallahassee Fire Department, and retired after 42 years as an assistant chief. His son, Tom Coe, I'm sure many of you know, was served as a police officer in Tallahassee all the way through working his way to police chief, and now he's been an assistant city manager in Tallahassee for 16 years. And his two boys, Chief Ridgway's grandsons, Matt and Mike Coe, are both firefighters on the department. So it's four generations of amazing history. His archives, we were so fortunate to have a guy named Maurice Majak who took a real interest in our history and started a verbal history project, he and Lieutenant Judy Davison, and they went and interviewed, a lot of these older chiefs, and Chief Ridgway was one of them, and got so much information on tape, which is, just so valuable to us now that he's gone.
Yeah, because there are so many organizations that don't have that sense of history, or anyone who's kept that stuff and is able to codify it and have it in some form that people can access and think, wow, what a glorious history you've had with the department.
Well, organizations and families. You think about it, and there's always that family historian, to sit down and the value of them sitting down and just relating their story after story after story, so that you can pass it on to generations. And the same thing with an organization. The fire department's a big family anyway.
Yeah, and a growing family too. Back before we went on the air, we were talking about the continuous expansion up until recently, really, of the Tallahassee Fire Department, starting back, just over 100 years ago, and how it has grown. In that 26 years that you've been on the force, Chief, how many branches, outlying facilities did we add to the department?
Well, I came at a period of expansion. So I came in 1987, and the City of Tallahassee Fire Department had always served the unincorporated area of Leon County, but there was never a formal agreement between the city and Leon County until 1988. And that's when that agreement came into place, or when it was in negotiations during 87 when I came on as well. But in that agreement, we put on five stations in the unincorporated area. And so that in 87, 88, we opened five stations, stations 10 through 14. And then in 2000, we opened station 15, which is out at Bannerman Road and Bull Headley.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's it. That's the last station we've added. So we haven't had one in about 13 years. There is one in design phase right now, though, that is going to be built out with the Consolidated Communications Center on Weems Road.
That's right. And that facility is scheduled to be open before too terribly long. It's been coming along pretty fast.
Yes, the facility – now, not the station, but the facility, the communications mm-hmm. facility, we're scheduled to actually move into – I guess I should say they are scheduled to actually move into in August.
Well, what's something like that going to do as far as the response time and all that sort of thing if you have everything all kind of in one place?
Yeah, man, let me tell you, and I say this without reservation, sometimes we don't come down really hard on the side of any issue for the sake of who we might anger on the other side. But I say this without reservation. In my 26 years here, I believe it's going to be the single best contributor to public safety that we've done yet. All the agencies will be together on one system. So every single emergency incident, it will impact. It's going to shave times off. We have a great system now, but we still have a system that has to transfer calls from one agency to the other, and that takes time. And if it's your emergency, 10 seconds, 15 seconds, 20 seconds, it means a lot.
For folks who don't know, who've never maybe hung out at the fire department, which can be a fascinating thing, I smell smoke in my house, or I actually see some flames, and I call 911. What happens then? Walk us through that.
I will walk you through it. I will walk you through what happens now, and then I'll walk you through what will happen
okay.
when this center opens up. So we have two what's called primary service answering points. Okay, they're the answering points for 911. If you're calling from the city, it's answered at the communication center at the Tallahassee Police Department. If you are calling from the unincorporated area, it's answered from at the sheriff's department at their communication center. Okay, so if the sheriff's department currently dispatches for Leon County Sheriff's Office and Leon County EMS. The police department currently dispatches for Tallahassee Police Department and Tallahassee Fire Department. Okay, so let's say, for example, that you have a fire in the unincorporated area. It's going to be answered by the PSAP at the county, at the sheriff's department. You're going to say that it's a fire, and then they're going to transfer you to the police department, who is then going to take the information and dispatch the fire department. So it's I'm telling you, I don't know how they do it so seamlessly. They do it seamlessly now, and they do it in a great fashion, but it takes time. So conversely, if you have a medical call in the city, it's going to there'll be a medical call in the city that's answered by the police department. You say it's medical. It gets transferred to the sheriff's department, triaged by Leon County EMS, and if it's emergent in nature, serious enough that we need lights and sirens, they dispatch their units, and then they also transfer it back to the police department to dispatch fire units to go with them.
Okay?
I'm telling you, we have got great response times currently, but this new system will eliminate all of that. You will call 911, whether you are in the city or whether you are in the unincorporated area. It will be answered by a consolidated PSAP, one agency. The call taker will have the ability, and the people at that agency will have the ability to dispatch fire, police, sheriff's office, and Leon County EMS, all of them. All of our resources will be on the same system so we can track who's where and we can get closest unit dispatch. So it's going to shave seconds off of every call, and seconds are important.
Well, let's look at then you have received the call from whether it's in the unincorporated area or in town, and it finally hits the fire department. Then what?
Okay, well, so we get the call. It alerts the stations. We have station alerting tone, and the people that are responding to the call, we have computer systems in the cabs of the units that will tell them where the call is, the details of the call, and actually map it out for them. So they'll get up from whatever they're doing. They'll go to the units. They'll get dressed in their protective gear. They'll get on the unit. They'll respond to the call.
How long does that usually take just to, you know, from the time the call comes in to the time the guys and the gals are on the truck and rolling out the door?
Okay, well, there's three components of response time, and that's the call process time, which is from the time you call 911 and somebody answers to the time the station gets alerted, right?
Mm-hmm.
We try to do that under a minute. And then there's turnout time. We call it turnout time or prep time, which is from the time the station is alerted till the time you get out the door. We try to do that in 45 seconds to a minute. And then there's travel time. Now, our goal is to reach 90% of our emergency incidents within 6 minutes or less, total time. Currently, we reach about 52%. But obviously, that's a very lofty goal. But we keep it as a standard because we think it's important.
That also has an impact, doesn't it, on people's insurance rates for property?
Well, response time doesn't necessarily. What impacts insurance rates is our readiness, our staffing, the amount of staffing, the location of our units, and the type of units, and the water supply that's out there. So I often tell people, you know, in the fire department, all my costs really are sunk. I mean, you're paying for our readiness to respond. You know, the incremental cost of response is very small after, you know, because if that engine sits there properly trained, properly staffed, and you know, with all the equipment, then that costs what it costs, whether they go on one call or whether they go on 1,000 calls. The only difference then is the incremental cost of fuel and some supplies,
mm-hmm.
right? So what the real cost is in a fire department is our readiness to respond. And then the insurance service organization, they come in and they measure your readiness. They measure your training. They measure the type of equipment, the water supply system in the community. And they have all of these equations that determine some rating system. The sad thing about that is it used to be pretty standard and you knew what a rating would do to premiums one way or the other. But now some insurance companies apply it, some don't, some use banding in ratings, some just go strictly from distance from station. So it's hard to quantify the impact on the community when you're making deployment decisions.
Oh, that has to be a really complicated algorithm that they use to figure that stuff out.
Yeah, well, you know, I'd love to be able to go to my commission and say, hey, if I put this station, it's going to reduce us or increase our rating from a 3 to a 2, which is going to reduce premiums, which is going to save the taxpayers X amount of dollars. But because it's not consistent, I can't really quantify it with specificity, and that makes it a little bit difficult.
Yeah, because I'd heard that before, that we had, relatively speaking, pretty low insurance rates when it came to that type of part of the equation, figuring out what was the response of the – or response capability, I guess, of the local fire department.
And they have split ratings now. They, you know, we used to just be a class 3. Now you're a class 3 unless you're – farther than 1,000 feet from a hydrant, and in the city, in case you're a 4. And so they have all these different systems now, so it just complicates it quite a bit.
How come we don't have more big fires in town? There's a lot of places, you know, maybe older cities that just seem to have – there's always something blowing up or bursting into flames and taking out whole blocks. And here in Tallahassee, it's, you know, a kitchen fire here and an attic fire there, and most times, it seems.
Because we're so good, Tom. Clearly, that's the answer. Thank you for setting me up. Now, if you look – think about our downtown area, okay? A lot of the larger buildings are relatively new. A lot of the smaller core buildings in our downtown area are brick, right? We don't have a lot of old wood frame, wooden structures throughout our downtown area. The other thing is the new buildings are built to codes that really help firefighters. You know, for example, there are a certain amount of protections in the building that will keep a fire – delay the spread of fire from one unit to the next. I think about, you know, Chicago and Miss O'Leary's cow, and, you know, you get a fire started, but those buildings in those blocks were all wood frame, multi-story, and connected with common walls with no protection systems whatsoever. You know, today's buildings have sprinkler systems. They have standpipe systems. They have firewalls. They have masonry construction. They have protected beams, things that help us slow the fire.
On the residential side, how much has the proliferation of smoke detectors helped? Because there used to be standard procedure that at least a couple times a year you would have fire fatalities, it seemed. And I don't – in the releases that, you know, you guys send out, I don't see too much of that anymore.
Well, smoke detectors save lives. There's just no way around it. I mean, when you – are alerted to a fire and have an opportunity to get out, your odds of survivability are obviously much, much higher. I wish I could rattle off the statistics to you right now, but I'm not prepared for that. But I want to say it's something like I don't know. I'm not going to make up a number, but it's significant, the decrease in fire fatalities in structures that have smoke detectors over those that don't. You know, in Tallahassee, we've done a really great job, I think, reaching out and providing smoke detectors to the community. Whether or not that's impacted fatalities, it's hard to say because it's hard to measure what hasn't occurred,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So that's always where we're trying to talk about our goals, and what we're actually measuring is what hasn't occurred. In fact, when I became chief, we used to a common measure was property loss by fire. You know, you lost $12 million in property last year by fire. What does that tell you? Nothing, really. What's important is what property was saved by the fire department's direct intervention. So in other words, if my house is on fire and it's worth $100,000 and we get there and we save 90% of it and have a $10,000 loss, as opposed to were we not there, we would have had a $100,000 loss, then we've saved $90,000. You know, and last year, the fire department saved $75 million in property by their direct intervention. So that's more important to me. That's a more important number than what the fire loss was. It's what was the fire saved.
Yeah, and for the average person whose property that was, that's a very significant number.
Yeah, well, not to mention, I mean, what you really lose in fire on a personal level, it's not the property. Most of us have the benefit of insurance. What you really lose are your memories, you know, the things that you've collected over your lifetime that can't be replaced. And you lose your pets, a lot of pets lost in fires, you know, because they're home alone. You know,
yeah.
And those things are priceless to families.
Does that help also to have a little sticker on the door, something, save our pets, firefighter, please?
Or? Everything you can do helps. I'd like to say that we always check for those stickers, but we always treat every occupancy as if it's occupied. And we search everything. We find animals. We bring them out. We have oxygen masks for animals on every engine, along with our treatment equipment for people. So I mean, we understand that pets are part of your family, too.
414-1234, we're talking to Tallahassee Fire Chief Cindy Dick, who's going to be leaving the department that she's been serving so ably for the past nearly 26 years. You're coming up in, what, 1st of July?
Really? July 31st.
July 31st, okay. What led you to that decision now? I mean, you've got—
That's a good question.
You are not over the hill by any stretch of the imagination now. Come on.
No, that's a good question. But, you know, I entered drop last year. When I got my 25 in, I entered drop, and I had intended to stay for a while. My stepfather died in January. I think that impacts decisions. You know, I'm a cancer survivor. That impacts my decision. And, you know, my son is going to go into high school next year. And I've worked his whole life. I have worked this job since he was in kindergarten, and this is not an 8-to-5 Monday through Friday job. This is a, you know, very demanding job that's taken me away from my family quite a bit. And, you know, I figure there'll always be an opportunity for more work or more money, but there will never be an opportunity for more time. And I just kind of want to be with him before he's off to conquer the world. I know he'll be back with his hand out for money, but my direct period of influence will be over, you know, pretty soon here. And I just want to spend that time with my family.
Yeah, even at the beginning or the cusp of high school, a lot of kids kind of have an idea which way they want to go. Any idea where he wants to
go? No idea where he wants to go. None whatsoever. We're taking it one day at a time. Right now, he wants to go out of the eighth grade.
Yeah, that's the first thing we got to do there right. To get to the big nine. So it's kind of time for you to stop smelling the smoke and smelling the roses, huh?
Yeah. I may 6 months from now go, what the heck? Because I'm sure it's going to be a big transition. But, you know, I'm really looking forward to it. It's a new part of my life, and I am sure I will get into something. I always have, and I'll find myself doing something. I don't know what, focusing on family is what I'm going to do for a little while. See if I can get my golf handicap down a little bit.
Hey, that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
414-1234, Tallahassee Fire Chief Cindy Dick, our guest here for the next 20 minutes or so right here on Perspectives. It's 800-926-8809 long distance. And you can follow us on Twitter, too, at WFSU Perspective. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. Tallahassee Fire Chief Cindy Dick with us, and we head back to the phones where Pam eagerly awaits. Hi, Pam.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm just fine and enjoying the show, and I wanted to congratulate Cindy on what I think is her wise decision to spend the time with her son at this very important time in his life. As she said, she can always go back to work. With her credentials, she can do just about anything.
God, that is great, Pam. And Cindy's here just nodding her head in total agreement with you. So thanks for the affirmation of that.
Thanks for a good show.
Thank you. Really appreciate your listening and calling in, Pam. And that is a nice option, though, to spend time, because we were saying just during the break, even a gorilla can raise a baby, but boy, when they hit those preteen and teenage years, they really need to have someone there that says, hey, I know you're going to ignore me. There are times I'm going to embarrass the heck out of you, but I'm here.
Yeah. He would absolutely disagree that this is necessary, but that's all the more reason to do it, right? Yeah. I mean, just the availability, I think, is big.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll see.
Well, other than following another Lincoln, following in the family tradition, since you just intimated that you went to Lincoln High School too, yay Trojans, what else would you like to do with that time? Travel?
I love to travel. I do intend to travel quite a bit, although, you know, maybe much of that will probably be after he's out of high school. You know, but I love to travel. I'm an avid golfer, albeit a bad golfer. I would love to see if I could get my golf handicap back down a little bit. You know, there's all kinds of things. I've got this new passion for cooking. I'll explore that a little bit. I don't know what I'll do.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
Well, do some teaching. I don't know what I'll do.
Yeah, there's so many options. I mean, a whole world is opening up right now, which is really kind of exciting.
It's funny. You know, the reaction has been a little bit funny to me because the first thing everybody wants to know is, you know, am I dying? You know, how's your health? My health is fine, at least as far as I am aware of. You know, so – and then people think something's up. I've got another job somewhere or something. But I don't, you know. I'm just totally doing it for the reasons I expressed, and we'll see what's next on the horizon.
Looking back, what was probably the worst situation that you encountered, the most challenging one? The call came in, you know, when you were actually out jumping on the truck and going out and doing that. What was anything that sticks out as, oh, my God, that was just horrific?
You know, sadly – we see an awful lot of death. And I remember one particular incident that – I mean, and I remember so many, and I'm not going to go into detail, but I remember a car wreck late in the night way out Centerville Road many, many, many years ago when I was working out at the station on Chairs Crossroad. And it was a really seriously bad car wreck with a single occupant who was killed. But she was misidentified and there was just a lot – it was just – that one really stuck with me. But when I tell the story about people in the fire service and, you know, people – and all emergency services, I don't think people appreciate what we really see and go through. We're humans just like everybody else. So we are not immune to the impact, the emotional impact of tragedy. And when I ride around town and I pass through intersections and I pass through, you know, streets, I recall calls. You know, and I haven't been on the street riding a unit in it, you know, over 8 years. But I recall also, I remember that wreck there, or there was a bad wreck here, you know, or I went to a medical call there. You know, those kinds of things will always be with you once you've done this.
And yet there's got to be some good memories, too, that are coming out of
this. Awesome memories. You know, there's just a lifetime full of memories. They're all good. Even the sad ones are good because you feel like you've made an impact. And you may not have been able to make an impact on those that lost their lives at the incident, but you had an opportunity to make an impact on the survivors. You know, I can remember a man who had a cardiac arrest and died on Christmas Day, you know. And you go and you find out that there's nothing more you can do for him. But at that point, you know, his wife becomes our patient. And the compassion and the empathy that you're able to provide for the family at that point in time means something. So at least you walk away saying, it, if I was nothing more than a shoulder at that moment, then that's important.
One thing that we had one fire call at our house. We've been in the same place now, well, since we moved to Tallahassee back in 79. And this was a, as I recall, a minor electrical fire, something I guess in the junction box or something. Smelled smoke and our unit is right out on Hartsfield Road, like four blocks away. Mm-hmm. Zippity-doo. You talk about 6 minute response time. I think they were there in probably 45 seconds. It was incredible. And they came in, checked everything out, made sure that there was no actual fire to deal with. But still, they couldn't quite track down what the origin was. And so they left, but came back
right
in an hour, say, is everything still okay? Gee whiz, that just – I did not call them.
Right.
They came back to right check, is everything okay? And then, we still don't have it down yet. And finally they found it. But it took two calls. That impressed me just so much. I'd never seen anything like that.
Yeah, well, it's you know, the incident's not over until you're absolutely sure you've removed all the danger. And oftentimes we go back and we call it check for rekindle. Now, this was an incident where there had not been a significant fire. But if something's smoldering in a wall or smoldering in the attic, you know, it can grow. It will grow if it's not tended to and if it's not located and extinguished. So what we do is if we've had a fire, even after we've extinguished it, we do what's called overhaul. We make sure that we've found all the hidden fire we can find. But then we come back in about an hour to make sure that there hasn't been any hidden fire somewhere that got away from us.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we still got the house. It survived. Back to the phones we go. Andrea is on line two. Hi, Andrea. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hello. How are you?
Hey, we're doing good. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, first off, I want to congratulate Cindy on a wonderful run you had there, and it was a pleasure working with you. It really, truly was. And I just wanted to go back to the comment about the old guys, you know, the guys that might have had some opposition to us being there. And I just wanted to comment because I get that question a lot, too. And guys, people are not one-dimensional. And I worked with a guy who would go to his neighbor and say women had no place in the fire service. But when he came to work, he did his job, and he made me a better firefighter.
Absolutely.
And that's what the bottom line is.
That's absolutely right, and that's what I was trying to convey earlier. This is, by the way, Andrea Jones, the one that retired as a division chief of operations and was present at that conversation that got me into the fire service in the first place. But that, what she's saying is absolutely right. That's why I say I don't begrudge them. You know, there's always opposition, but there's so much learning. They had so much history and still do today.
Yeah.
Everybody that's there has so much to teach everybody else.
A lot of the good that I am is a result of their efforts.
No doubt. No doubt at all.
So have a good time, and I hope to see you soon.
Thanks, girl.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Andrea. We appreciate the call. Oh, my gosh, that is really sweet. But yeah, she sounds like retirement's going well for her, too.
She's awesome.
Yeah.
She really is.
Well, over that 100 years, though, that's another thing that fascinates me, that you've got such an incredible amount of history here in this particular fire department. And as you intimated earlier, a relatively large department, which for you not being out on the street during the past 5 years or so and really having to be an administrator and a coach and a facilitator and all that kind of thing, that was kind of a jump, wasn't it, from the way you originally got into this biz?
Yeah. However, throughout my career, I had pretty diversified experiences. I spent some time in just about every division in the department. So I'd go, spend a year here in training, and then I'd go back out online for a while. And I worked in communications when we civilianized it to the police department. It used to be firefighters doing it, and did that for a year. So I've had a lot of great experiences that prepared me for this moment. You know, you can't jump into administration. You can't lead an organization, as Andrea was talking about, one-dimensional, if you have a one-dimensional career path either. It's really difficult. Just suppression in and of itself would not have prepared me for the budgetary fires that I had to fight and personnel fires that I had to fight and all these other things. So those diversified experiences really helped me.
Mm-hmm. And you'd mentioned the possibility post-retirement of going into education. You have been a regular on what we euphemistically call the rubber chicken circuit, going out and talking to various community groups, civic organizations, all that kind of thing for years now. And you've always put on a really, really good talk. I'd love to see that continue.
I'd love to do that. I mean, I love that. I get energy from that. If there's any value in what I'm saying, I'm more than happy to do those kinds of things.
Where are we going as far as firefighting is concerned? It seems to have – it has all this history behind it, but in many ways we're still kind of fighting fires the same way we did 50, 75 years ago. Is there any place it can go, do you think?
I think that what we are going to see over the next 20 years in the fire service is we're probably going to see somebody's going to come up with some extinguishing agent that is much more portable, that is not water necessarily, and I know that that's way out of the box thinking in terms of major structure fires. But you see a lot of fighting with foam now. But I think somebody's going to come up with something. I think futuristically we're going to be wearing some extinguishing agent on our back. You know, an air tank on one side and this extinguishing agent on the other, and with these guns that go in and do it. And I think that's going to, first of all, just ecologically we can't sustain all this water, and then there's runoff in it, and I'm sure that people will continue to invent lighter gear, faster gear, more efficient extinguishing agents and those kind of things.
Yeah, and with the amount of electronics that you now have in both, commercial and residential properties right now, which water can really mess up, I imagine there's, other things that can be used that would at least reduce the amount of damage to those kinds of things as well.
And when you talk about technology and just its impact on the fire service, I mean, when we came, we had, 3x5 index cards that we sat in the day room and drew maps on, street files of index cards. And now a battalion chief on their way to a call can go to Google Maps, pull up the whole structure, can then integrate it with system plans that we have in our system and look at floor plans, look at where things are stored, look at hazards around the structure. I mean, the availability for information on the way to a call is just so much greater now. And that'll continue. You know, people have it on their iPhones. We'll probably be piping it into their, you know, masks with little displays that have floor plans in them.
Yeah,
you know.
A heads-up display in the mask.
Right.
That would be
cool.
We
already have that to the extent that it shows your mask pressure. And we have infrared technology that we can take and search with, and it can find hidden fires. It can find victims of fire in pitch black environments where you can't see. So the technology in the last 26 years has really changed, and the next 26 won't be any different.
There are some folks I've heard in all this political discussion that goes on here about the proper role of government and all that. It has even been suggested that perhaps it would be better if we return to private fire companies like there was, say, back in the days of the Chicago fire, when you would have competing commercial fire companies, some of them going around setting fires so they could put them out, but that might be a better thing than using all this taxpayer dollar to have people sitting around a station waiting for the bell to ring.
Well, who's going to pay for the private fire companies? You're going to get a big bill after the fact? I mean, I don't know. There are communities that use subscription service. You know, there's a certain mythology, and I'm going to talk from my perspective, and I'm going to talk from my career in government. There's a certain mythology that because it's government, it costs more. We are extremely efficient in what we do, and we are extremely conscious of our fiduciary responsibility to the community. And it is our job to stretch that tax dollar as much as we can while providing the service at the level that our community is palatable to our community. Now, the community could come in and say, we don't want – I mean, there's two extremes. We could have a fire department that was able to reach every structure in our 670 square miles of Leon County in 4 minutes, okay? Or we could not have one at all and just pay insurance claims. I mean, those are the two extremes, right? But neither of those extremes would be palatable to the community. And so it's my job to find out – well, it's my job to recommend the system that's going to provide the best service. And then it's my job to find out what – from the policymakers, what is palatable to our community, and then structure the best system within those dollars. But private fire companies, I mean, we looked at that. We provide service to the airport. We looked at maybe changing that, and we found that what's out there on the market is much more expensive than what we're currently providing.
I can't even mention the expense that you have in regards to training. Went out. Mike invited a couple of reporters to go out to the latest fire, I guess, airport fire. What do you call that? Recertification or
right.
Whatever. And just to see with the make-believe plane that
yeah.
Catches on fire, that's really cool. Just that exercise alone, I imagine, would be an incredible amount of money to be replicated in a commercial or a business-like situation.
Absolutely. Remember, in what you're paying for in the fire service is our readiness to respond, right? And that those three people, let's take it simplistically, those three people are on that fire engine in that station waiting, you know, for a call to happen. So the costs are sunk. They're in personnel, they're in equipment and everything else. So if you have a call at your house, they're available. If you don't have a call at your house, they're still available, right? And so the incremental cost of the response is not that much as compared to the cost of our readiness to respond. And that's what the insurance company's premiums, as we discussed earlier, refer to.
Will you have any input into your successor?
I certainly hope so. I mean, there's been 4 months. I've given 4 months' notice because I want to help ensure a smooth transition. I've also said that I'm willing to stay on in some capacity, limited capacity afterwards, if needed, to finish up some major projects or help with the transition. I certainly hope I'll have some input and be part of that process. I would like to.
And how will that process work? Is it just like any other personnel matter? They advertise nationally for a fire chief, and then it gets vetted before the city manager and all that kind of thing?
Yep, that's what will happen. We'll go out and advertise, do a nationwide search, I'm sure, and they'll be screened, and then there'll be employee interview panels, and then there'll be stakeholder interview panels, and then you know the manager will have her independent interview, and there'll be a lot of input that goes into the decision.
Now, once that decision is made, and you have hopefully a chance to sit down with the person who is going to be taking over your situation there, what kind of advice do you give them, or do you?
No, you do. I wonder how much advice a new person takes all the time, you know, from the one that's leaving, but we've had a pretty good run. I think what's important from my perspective is that whoever it is doesn't underestimate the importance of the people that are doing the job and the reason that we're here. It's easy as a chief to get caught up in the building of stations and the pretty apparatus and the politics of it all. But the reason we exist is because somebody in need calls 911 and those three people on that fire engine show up. That's the reason we exist. Everything else we do is to support that. And I think that if you keep that in your mind and stay focused on that mission and who's doing it, I think that you have better success.
Well, for focusing on that mission for 26 years, Cindy Dick, we thank you for your service to the city of Tallahassee and the unincorporated area here in Leon County. We wish you all the best and come back anytime.
Okay? Thank you, Tom. I really enjoyed it.
Perspectives brought to you by WFSU-FM here in Tallahassee. Technical assistance by Taylor Cox. I see Lydell Rawls back there in an assistant capacity today. And Stephen Rodriguez was handling phone calls and also the Twitter feeds. I'm Tom Flanagan. Hope you can join us next week. We're going to be talking about the Veterans Stand Down that's coming to the North Florida Fairgrounds not too long from now. Have a good day.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.